made by the stacks. The smell filled the room, and I was about to put it back when a stiff piece of material slipped from the folds. Carla and I looked at each other. It was canvas, a little over a foot square, not in the best shape, but there was an image on one of the sides. It was pretty rough, but the paint was vibrant and the image very clear. Some kind of Indian warrior in full headdress, looking down at a mustachioed cavalryman. Both men are locked in a death struggle. There was a cloud of what might have been smoke covering the Indian's groin, and he had his hand around the soldier's throat. The blue-clad horseman was grabbing the chief's arm with a look of grim determination, even as the Indian was bringing a war club down on his head. The decimated headdress on the Indian was strange-looking, almost like one that a Seminole might have worn, but as far as I knew, they never wore headdresses. It's a painting, or part of one. Carol came over. It looks old.
Yep.
Any signature or date on it?
Not that I can see.
I glance around the room at the assembled art. Now, with all this, why didn't he have this one on his wall, too? Maybe it had sentimental value. I studied the oddity. It's old and strange. Turning it, I looked at the edges. The canvas is unpainted on the ends, so it wasn't cut from a larger piece.
Do you think it has something to do with the money?
I shrugged.
Possibly.
Possibly not. But I can take it someplace and have it analyzed. Maybe rent it over to the Brenton and Bighorn. Maybe the museum can tell us what it is or what it's worth. Glancing around at the paintings, I had a thought. Did he have any kind of safe deposit box?
We don't know.
Did he have a will or anything? I've been going through his files, and he has it marked that he does. She glanced around the room at the stacks.
But we haven't found it yet.
I joined her in the looking, wondering where you'd start, and glad it wasn't my job.
There's no way to trace it.
I gestured toward the box of money, now on the banker's desk. It's money. I thought that's what you guys did.
I'm afraid I'm not going to be much help.
The young banker, Wes Haskins, shook his head and adjusted his glasses. The bills are not serialized. They're just random, and the binding tabs have no identification on them at all. I leaned against the closed door. Can you give me something to go on?
Florissa makes a nice shoe.
Wes. He picked up the loose stack and studied the binder.
The tabs are self-adhesive, so I'd say no older than the 90s, but we can run it through the counter and get a date on the bills themselves to give you a general idea of the age.
Okay.
One thing.
All right.
We're going to have to alert the state and the IRS.
He looked down at the box.
Over $10,000, and it has to be reported, and this is a lot more than $10,000.
Great. And where are they?
Over in Sheridan.
Alert away. But I've got a question. Does Charlie Lee have a safe deposit box here at the bank? He leaned back in his chair.
You'll have to go through probate or get a warrant for that kind of information, Walt.
I sighed. The old president would have just told me.
I could go to jail.
I glanced across the street at my offices. Not mine. There was a pause, and then he spoke.
Yes.
Yes what?
Just yes.
Charlie Lee Stillwater does have a safe deposit box here at the bank.
I didn't say that.
So he doesn't?
I didn't say that either.
You said yes.
Yes, I did.
Concerning?
Just yes.
Right. Got it. I reached out and dumped the entire lot on his desk, carefully unpeeling the grocery bag and placing it back into the box before putting the top back on and rubber banding it.
I think, one more thing?
I tucked the box under my arm and opened the door.
Yep.
He pointed at my package.
That is the current bag used by the IGA here in town.
You sure of that? He pulled an identical bag from under his desk and placed it on top of the mound of cash.
Jen packed my lunch in one today.
This is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. Henry Standing Bear, owner, proprietor, and best friend, glanced over his shoulder at the whooping and hollering emitting from the vintage Sony Trinitron above his head.
Yes, in the canon of truly horrible coaster films, this is perhaps one of the worst.
How do you suppose they got Robert Shaw to be in it? Producing another can of Rainier on my Red Pony Bar and Grill coaster, he crushed and pitched the empty into the recycling bin.
I would imagine, and this is only a guess, that there was drinking involved.
My undersheriff, Victoria Moretti, studied the side of my face. We could have all had bonuses. Ignoring her, I continued looking up at the screen, where Custer and his men fired a ridiculous cannon at some really embarrassingly dressed Indian extras.
I think they filmed this one in Spain.
We could have all had new vehicles.
Continuing to watch the movie, I pontificated.
I guess they couldn't afford horses.
She lifted her wine and saluted the TV.
We could have all taken a cruise to Italy.
Taking a sip of my beer, I gestured toward the actors. From the outfits, what tribe would you say those natives are, Henry? The big Cheyenne swept his hair back and paused, polishing a glass long enough to glance up at the screen.
Generic-y, I would say.
Finally giving up, Vic turned and watched the screen for a moment.
So that happened around here, right?
What?
She smiled and turned to look at me. The little bighorn thing? Henry sat the glass and the towel on the bar in perfect symmetry with the others.
The Battle of the Greasy Grass.
She glanced at me again. That's what the natives call it.
Same battle?
Yep,
I shrugged. They won it so they can call it whatever they want. She sipped her drink.
I've heard a bunch of stories, but what really happened?
I glanced at the Cheyenne Nation, who suppressed a smile.
Well, there are a lot of versions.
So tell me yours,
the Reader's Digest edition.
I sighed, glancing at the bear again.
Are you going to interrupt?
Because if you are, then you get to tell it.
He placed two fingers to his pursed lips, indicating that he would remain quiet, so I began in rote, largely repeating what had been taught to me from textbooks in the 60s. Not long after the aborted treaties of the Black Hills, an area of great spiritual importance to the Lakota, gold was found there, and hostilities recommenced. The bear shrugged.
The white men lied.
After a moment, I continued. A large contingent of Lakota
and Cheyenne
defeated General Crook at the Battle of Rosebud Creek.
The battle where the girl saved her brother.
I threw up my hands. I quit. He folded his arms and cocked his head.
You are doing very well.
You said you wouldn't interrupt.
I am simply giving a general sense of perspective, a cultural play-by-play, if you will.
I took a sip of my beer and began again. General Terry had been dispatched to deal with the Indians, even though their exact location and number were unknown. He sent Custer out to find them, with strict instructions that he should not attack but wait for Terry's much larger force. I glanced at Henry, but he said nothing. Custer was a dashing and flamboyant commander,
a devious and irrational bundle of manic depression who finished last in his class at West Point, in short, a horse's ass,
who hoped to deal with the Indian problem himself in hopes of getting out of trouble with President Grant. The Cheyenne Nation spoke out of the corner of his mouth,
under oath, called the brother of Grant a liar and thief,
and hoped to advance his own political career with a personal victory.
Like all true horses' asses, he hoped to go into politics.
Custer found the Indians,
or the Indians found him.
I took a sip of my beer and split his forces into three parts, ordering Majorino,
a drunk,
to deliver the main attack while Custer and roughly 200 riders attacked the flank. It was only when they came into view that Custer realized the size of the Indian camp, which was enormous. Nonetheless, they continued the attack, were beaten back, and quickly surrounded and killed.
Except for Custer, who killed himself.
Or not.
He shot himself.
Henry, the bullet wound was in his left temple, and he was right-handed.
Then his brother shot him.
I turned back to Vic. Custer's brother-in-law and nephew were also killed in the battle, and it's believed in some circles that Tom may have shot the mortally wounded general to keep the Indians from capturing and torturing him more.
Which they most certainly would have, the torture of choice being cutting the victim's genitals off and placing them in their own mouth. But in the case of Custer, the women pushed awls in his ears, puncturing his eardrums, so that in the camp of the dead, he would be deaf as he had been in this world. He took a sip of his drink. Monacita, Custer's Cheyenne wife, warned the Lakota women that the long hair was family and that they should not mutilate him.
Custer's what?
The Cheyenne nation nodded succinctly. But I believe they cut off a little finger joint and shoved an arrow up his penis.
Not to change the subject, I shook my head. But what leads you to believe that his brother shot him?
The bear continued to sip his soda water. I have a brother. Chapter 2
Russians.
Russians?
Russians!
I stared at the old man in the U.S. Navy Dixie Cup hat as he smoothed out his spaghetti-stained cardigan. I waited for him to add more, but he didn't, so I felt compelled to ask. And, Kenny, where did Charlie Lee meet these Russians? He gestured all around us.
Why, right here.
Leaning against my truck, with Dog's massive head sticking out of the passenger side window beside me, I glanced up and down Route 16, my eyes lingering on the snow-capped peaks of the Bighorns Cloud Peak Wilderness area. He met Russians here, on the highway? All four men nodded. They were once again parked in their wheelchairs next to the veterans' home red brick sign. What, they were driving by in a staff car with big red hammers and sickles on the doors, and he flagged them down? The rail thin one, in the thick glasses and Air Force ball cap, Ray, snickered. The one in the cardigan, Kenny, gave him a look to silence him, but that did little good.
He talked to the Russians a lot.
More than one Russian?
They were sometimes two.
Two Russians. Delmar, dressed in the rayon Marine's jacket, joined in. Say, shouldn't you be taking notes on all this? The other three nodded.
It's a matter of national security.
That's right. I calmly pulled out a notepad and pen and pretended to write things down. So, two Russians. They all four nodded. Did you catch their names? They all four first looked at one another, then back at me, and then shook their collective heads. What did they look like? They all looked at one another again, and then the individual in the green fatigue jacket and boonie hat, Clifton, volunteered,
Russians! They looked like Russians!
I closed my notebook. What, long gray coats and furry hats? Ray, the one in the Air Force ball cap that had the scrambled eggs embroidery on the front, nodded,
Furry hats, yeah!
What did they look like? I mean, besides the furry hats. Delmar, the Marine jacket, spoke up. One was a blonde woman, little bitty thing, and the other was an old fellow with a mustache. Ray interrupted.
He wasn't Russian.
Clifton took exception.
The hell he wasn't. He talked Russian, damn it. He talked English, too. Does that make him British, you moron?
Delmar clarified. She was Russian, but he was an American. After a moment, they all nodded in unison. Ray thought it important to add,
She was cute, too.
Age?
Younger than us.
I paused, but figured they were beyond getting their feelings hurt. That doesn't narrow the field much, guys. I stepped back and petted Dog. Not to change the subject, but did you fellas ever see Charlie Lee with a shoebox? They all stared at me. Right. Pocketing the notebook and pen, I pushed off the fender of my truck. You guys have anything else you'd like to add? Clifton smoothed his brim and looked up at me.
You going to catch who killed poor old Charlie Lee?
Well, as far as we know, Mr. Stillwater died of natural causes. They looked at one another and then back at me.
That's what they want you to think.
Right. I fished my keys out of the pocket of my jeans, along with my watch. Coming up on noon, don't you fellas need to get back in for lunch?
You're damn right. It's walleye fillets today with tartar sauce and tater tots.
Delmar agreed.
The only thing better is pizza night.
Kenny in the cardigan led the way, pivoting in his motorized wheelchair and sailing back with the complex of buildings in the distance. I watched as the remaining three peeled off in formation and motored their battery-powered way next to the rolling dales of the picturesque drive that ran alongside the main entryway, the hopped-up wheelchairs looking like a convoy with each one flying a different tiny flag. Watching the little procession go, I couldn't help but wonder how I'd decorate my own wheelchair someday.
Are we done yet?
I turned to find my undersheriff, having woken up from her nap,
scrubbing her eyes with the heels of her hands. I'm hungry. Evidently, it's walleye fillet day. She pushed Dog aside and hung out the window in what most people would consider a gorgeous High Plains mid-June day. So long as there's tartar sauce and tater tots, I'm all about the tots. She glanced around, her eyes traveling down the foothills to the Powder River country that stretched farther than any human eye could see. Holy shit, I'm glad it's summer. Following the lead of the wheelchair brigade, I said nothing. She turned her head and looked at me. Aren't you glad it's summer?
Yep.
I mean, you've been talking about it for months.
I have?
Yes, you've been complaining about the ice and cold ever since you got back from Mexico a few months ago.
I turned to look at her and then glanced around at the almost phosphorescent leaves of the trees and the lush grass of the irrigated state property. I guess I haven't noticed, or maybe it's not what I thought it was going to be.
What the hell did you think it was going to be?
I took a deep breath and let it out slowly. Different. Walking around the front of my truck, I climbed in and closed the door behind me, fastening my seatbelt and firing up the big V10. I turned to look at her again.
What? You are so weird lately.
Lately? She shrugged in admission.
Weirder.
I mean, you're not freezing up like you were so much, but you seem distracted all the time. Putting the selector lever into gear, I spun the steering wheel and started down the long drive toward Fort McKinney proper, aware that she was still looking at the side of my face.
What? I have a question.
More?
It's a personal question.
All right.
When you were down there in Mexico, and you can level with me on this.
Okay. She lodged herself against the passenger seat and continued studying me.
Did they shoot your dick off?
I almost ran off the road.
What? They shot it off, right?
No.
Because I haven't seen the thing in months, and I'm just thinking that it must be gone because it's fine. It's there, and it's fine. Thank you.
She placed an elbow on the sill and propped her head up, the fingers threaded into the thick blue-black hair, as she adjusted her sunglasses and gazed out the windshield.
Let me finish.
I'd rather you didn't.
Look, I'm no Gina Lollobrigida.
Actually, you are. She sat up, folding a tactical boot under herself and lowering her Clubmaster Ray-Bans to study me with the tarnished gold eyes.
Then why haven't I even seen the damn thing for months?
Look,
what, do I need to reintroduce myself, take a number, or what?
I've told you it's not you.
I really thought something was going to happen last night, after we left the bar, but you just put me in my unit like I was last week's groceries and then patted me on the head and sent me on my way.
I'm sorry.
I don't want you to be sorry. I want something else.
I'm getting that. Turning right, I drove past the flagpoles and the visitor's center, parking closer to the offices and living quarters. Look, can we discuss this some other time?
I want to do something more than just talk about it.
Okay.
So I've got another question.
I switched off the ignition and unbuckled my seatbelt.
Another one?
Yeah. What were you thinking about out down the road after the four horsemen of the metropolis rolled off?
Relieved at the change of subject, I sighed. I was wondering what I'd be decorating my wheelchair with when the time comes. She studied me for a long while and then smiled a voluptuous grin.
Me? I'll wear slinky outfits and drape across your lap like Mata Hari.
She dropped her sunglasses back onto her nose with a forefinger, and I was once again reminded of just how dangerous looking she could be.
You know what the greatest exercise against looming mortality is, right?
Watching Carol approach from the administration building, I nodded and climbed out, happy to have somebody else to talk to and something else to talk about. Across the way, the Doors played Riders on the Storm, which segued into Creedence Clearwater Revival's Fortunate Son from a pair of speakers lodged in the window of one of the second-story apartments.
How did it go?
I turned to her. Well, the investigation seems to have taken an unexpected and international turn in that Charlie Lee was evidently meeting with the KGB out by the front entrance. She covered her face with her hand as Vic came around to join us.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry.
I shrugged. They're a funny group. They were so adamant about talking to you. I should have known, she smiled. The Wavers, we originally called them Waves, but they didn't like that. How about wax, as in whack jobs? Vic leaned on my truck and glanced up at the speaker, wailing away into the all-but-empty parking lot. So who's Wolfman Jack? Carol looked that way, and I noticed there were all kinds of vintage rock and roll stickers applied to the entire window so that you couldn't see inside at all. Oh, that's Magic Mike Birdsall. He's kind of our unofficial radio station. He's got walls lined with records from the 60s and 70s. Goes nonstop all day.
Kind of nice.
Yeah, we had a new guy come in, over at administration, who asked if we could get Mike to turn it down. We told him he could go ask Mike if he wanted to, but that the last guy who tried to touch Magic Stereo came away with 3 broken fingers and a bloody nose. I gazed at the covered window. Violent, is he? Only if you touch his vinyl. I nodded. Any progress on Charlie Lee's room?
Quite a bit, actually. I stuck around last night and sorted through all the personal correspondence and then stacked all the books in the hall outside.
Aren't you afraid that somebody will take them? Carol glanced at Vic. They're art and history books. If they were playboys, I'd be worried. My undersheriff looked perplexed.
These guys don't read history books?
Not military history. I guess they've seen too much of it themselves. I hear it's walleye for lunch. She smiled. You're welcome to join us. Her smile faded, just a touch as she studied Vic.
I can have a few trays brought to Charlie's room. That way you can avoid the common area.
Why would we want to do that? She nodded toward my undersheriff.
She's going to cause quite a stir, and you're going to have about 50 guys wanting to sit at your table.
Ah, maybe we'll take your advice.
You remember where Charlie Lee's room is?
124.
Right, I'll get the lunches for you guys and meet you over there in about 10.
Deal. We walked through a day room, went past another reception desk next to a communal fireplace and down the hallway. Vic studied the stickers and memorabilia fastened to the doors, along with the residents' names on plastic plaques.
Reminds me of dorm rooms.
Noting the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine stickers, I added, with a little more of a military twist. Charlie Lee's room was easy to spot, with the books stacked along the wall beside the door. Hundreds of them. Stepping past, I leafed through a few at the top. Gardner's Art Through the Ages, Western Art of the 21st Century, Jansen's History of Art, The Image of the Black in Western Art, Volume 5, Landscape in Western Art. Charlie Lee was something of an aficionado.
Certainly liked art, too.
Vic picked up a few others before noting the look on my face.
What?
Turning the open page toward her, I pointed at the copious notes in the margins written in a careful hand. He should have been teaching somewhere. Turning the pages, I continued reading. These notes are really insightful, and his use of artistic terms is nothing short of impressive.
Did he go to school for this stuff?
Not that I know of. I stared at the stacks. Must have been self-taught.
You think he bought and sold paintings? That's where the money came from?
I don't know, but you'd think something like that wouldn't have gone unnoticed around here.
Placing the book back into the stack, I opened the door and flipped on the light, finding the place a lot more orderly than the last time I'd seen it. I'd say Carol's been working overtime. There were plastic milk case-style file folders and manila envelopes that filled a few old beer cases stacked neatly on a hand truck by the door. Slipping a few folders from the plastic containers, I looked at the writing on the envelope that read, Correspondence between CLS and the Buffalo Bills Center of the West in Cody. There were more with other illustrious names like the Booth Western Museum, the National Museum of the American Indian, the Brinton Museum over in Sheridan County, the Gilcrease Museum in Tulsa, the Eiteljorg in Indianapolis, and the Denver Art Museum.
Pretty amazing, huh?
We turned to find Carol, who was holding 2 trays in the doorway.
I'll say, and a pretty amazing job on your part in filing all this stuff.
She shrugged, handing each of us a tray with the aforementioned walleye, tartar sauce, and tater tots.
My father was an accountant.
Sitting on the bed, I watched as Vic sat in the guest chair and Carol leaned against the wall by the hand truck.
So what was all this correspondence about?
A lot of trading information about artists and their art. Sorry to be so vague, but to be honest, I didn't read any of it. As soon as I ascertained who it was, I just piled it into the appropriate files or boxes and moved on to the next. She glanced around. If I'd started reading, I don't think I would have gotten very far in getting it cleaned up. There were even letters he'd written back and forth with the Budweiser Corporation in St. Louis. No personal correspondence among family members? There were some letters from his daughter, but not much. They're in the second carton there. You didn't run into any more treasures or artwork? She shook her head. Only what's on the walls. She glanced around. Some of it's relatively valuable, but nothing worth $1 million. Starting on my lunch, I threw a chin toward the painting of the Buffalo Soldier standing in front of the Navajo rug. What about that one? I can't say for sure because I'm certainly no expert, but I'd say that one is relatively new from the look of the paint, the style and everything. Doesn't it almost look like a poster for a movie or something? In fact, it does. It also looks remarkably like Charlie Lee. Leaning forward, I studied the canvas. And there's no signature. Vic broke off eating with a piece of walleye on the end of a fork, which he extended toward the art. Has anybody looked on the back of the thing? Kara once again shook her head.